I was in Belfast on Thursday evening doing some final pieces of Christmas shopping. And don't feel sorry for me. It was only a few bits and pieces to do. But it's crazy busy and everyone's running about manic. And you sort of look around at all these harassed people with lists and, you know, and they're arguing with one another and it's chaos. And you feel sorry for people who are Christmas shopping. But worse than that, there were teenage girls in sleeping bags outside HMV. On Thursday evening, for tickets that went on sale yesterday morning. Worse than that, there were grown men there. I assume they're fathers, right? If not, we should be in prayer for them. But they're like One Direction tickets went on sale yesterday morning, and there were people, teenagers, in sleeping bags and tents outside HMV, and it was freezing. And I really felt so sorry for those people for lots of reasons, but I felt sorry for them. That they were, you know, so desperate to get a ticket for One Direction. I was thankful in that moment that I'm currently the father of two boys. And that, hopefully, you know, that may never be the case. I'll be queuing outside HMV for One Direction tickets. Please, no. But everyone in Belfast on Thursday evening had something in common. We came to the city. We came to the city in pursuit of something that we did not have, hoping that the city would provide for us something that we felt that we needed. We were all longing for something. Some people wanting bath bombs, other people wanting a boy band, but we were all there in pursuit of something, longing and having desires. You think about how we kind of generally feel sorry for people who have longings and desires. You tell your work colleagues or your friends that you're spending your weekend Christmas shopping, they're going to go, oh, I'm sorry. They feel sorry for you. They'll take pity on you that you're going to be spending your time that way. If you say to someone in your workplace or your family, I've got all my Christmas shopping done, then you're the smug person because everyone is jealous of you and they say, lucky you, they want to exchange places with you. They'd rather not have to do that thing. They'd rather not be in a position of need or longing. We see need as something to be avoided, something to step away from, something to get as far away as possible from. And as a result, success is tied up with possessing. Success is tied up with having. Think about even the way we talk. Once I get the kids to bed, that will be when life will be better for me during the day. Once I get my assignments done, once I have these exams out of the way, once I get the mortgage paid, once I get to summertime. You see, we tie up success with having, and we try and distance ourselves from being in a position of need. We live in a world that desperately tries to avoid being in need. We really want to step away from it as far as possible. We don't want to be people who need help. We want to be self-sufficient. That's our ambition. To be able to stand on our own two feet is the dream, is the goal. Entire advertising campaigns are built around satisfying the longings that you have so that you will no longer have those longings to pluck you from the nightmare that you're currently living in without that product. That's what the basis of most advertising companies are working around. They show someone without the product, and then they show someone with the product, and their life is totally transformed as a result of having. Success is measured and defined by how far we are from need. That's the kind of culture that we're living in. And into that culture, the words of Jesus from the Sermon on the Mount come to us like somebody singing out of tune. It just doesn't sound right. It sounds like a contradiction because he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Really? That doesn't seem to make sense in the culture that we're living in. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst. It's good to be in the line without the stuff you're looking for. Really? It's good to be in a sleeping bag in the freezing cold. It's good to be rushing around, hurrying. It's good to be in a position of longing and in need rather than being in a position of having everything. In a world obsessed with having it all, Jesus says that to be needy and thirsty and mourning a loss is a good thing. It's a good thing to be powerless, to be meek. They're blessed in his eyes. Happy are the poor is another way of describing what Jesus says. Let's think about that. You will never see that as an advertising campaign as you make your way up the escalator in Victoria Square. Happy are the poor. You're unlikely to come across that message on a billboard. Jesus is talking to his disciples and wanting them to discover something about the nature of life in general, something about the nature of discipleship. He wants them to grasp that their progress as his followers will not come about by gradually getting more and more independent from him. It will not be progress for them to be able to stand on their own two feet and to forget about Jesus altogether. He's saying, that's not how this whole thing works. Discipleship is not about you standing on your own two feet, becoming increasingly independent from me. He says, blessed are the poor in spirit. And he's not saying that as a way of picking two teams, you know, the spiritually rich and the spiritually poor. He's not trying to say there's two categories of people in the world, those who are spiritually rich and then those who are spiritually poor. He's saying that until we all realize the poverty of our own spirituality, then we will not be blessed or blessed or happy in the presence of God. Until we realize our own lack of resources spiritually, then we will not be blessed. Because when we realize that we haven't got it, then we'll run to the one who has it. We'll camp out. We'll queue in pursuit of it. When we realize, I haven't got the ticket, but I know someone who does, we will flock to that place. We will camp out in our sleeping bags until we have the spiritual resources that we need. But until when we think we have it, we'll be nowhere near Jesus because we'll think, I've got it already. As long as we think we can stand on our own two feet, we'll have no need for Jesus. That's why he says, blessed are those who are poor spiritually. Those who realize that they haven't got what it takes to please God, to satisfy God. That's a good position to be in, to realize that you're spiritually poor. He's not trying to pick teams and say they're spiritually poor and spiritually rich. He's saying we're all spiritually poor, but until you realize it, you're not blessed. It's a blessed thing to realize that you're without the resources that you need to satisfy God. Poor in spirit is the only kind of people there are, but not everybody realizes it. Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is possessed only by those who are poor in spirit. And this is a challenge to us inside the church. This is a challenge to you and I who are familiar with church activity, familiar with religious practice. Because we tend to think that we're okay, that we're in the camp of the people who are spiritually rich. And we are as long as we have a relationship with Jesus. But if we're trying to stand on our own two feet, we haven't got what it takes. We're without it. Our growth, our maturity, our development as disciples comes as we open the cupboards of our spiritual life and find them empty and realize that we do not have what it takes to satisfy God in and of ourselves. We cannot put food on the table that will satisfy the appetite of God. Our cupboards are empty. We do not have what it takes. Only when we realize that we are spiritually poor will we run to Jesus and in pursuit of him say, please, will you give us what we need to satisfy God's appetite for holiness, to satisfy God's appetite for truth, to satisfy God's appetite for kindness. Because on our own, we don't cut it. We don't have what it takes. We don't have the honesty and the purity and the goodness that God requires. Our cupboards are empty, but we need to run to the one who is full of all truth, all goodness, all kindness, all love, and plead with him to give us his life in the place of ours. When we understand that we cannot put food on the table that will satisfy God, we'll look to someone who can, and there is only one person who is able to do that, and his name is Jesus. It's then that we're blessed, because then and only then will we look away from our own spiritual reserves, look away from our own spiritual resources, and look to Jesus to give us what we need, to give us what we long for. See, Jesus is rich in spirit, and everyone else is poor. But the religious people of his day, and even the religious people about today, think that they're okay. There were groups of people who thought that they were making it on their own. And so they used theological words in their conversations and in their prayers, and they thought that was enough. They blew trumpets as they made an offering so that people would notice their generosity. They sneered and looked down their nose at other people who prayed in a way that wasn't up to their standard. They looked down their nose at the kind of dress that other people wore because they thought that they were, you know, standing on their own 2 feet by the kinds of clothes that they wear, by the kinds of music that they listen to, and they thought that God would be pleased with them because of their religious activity. They thought these kinds of things were spiritual resources to satisfy God's desire for holiness. And what Jesus is saying is, I don't care what you wear or what words you use, you're still spiritually poor. And you're in desperate need of someone to make you rich. Everyone else is poor in spirit, but Jesus is rich. And there were lots of religious leaders around there who were trying to push themselves forward as self-made millionaires in spiritual terms, trying to attract attention to themselves by their own spiritual activity, hoping that other people would be impressed by their Bible knowledge and by their connections, by what they were doing with their lives. They were trying to bluff their way, flaunting their activity, and blowing a trumpet to attract attention to themselves. They thought they could stand on their own 2 feet. And just in case Jesus' disciples started to get impressed with these guys, just in case Jesus' disciples started to think, that's the way I get to progress in my faith, Jesus says something contradictory in the Sermon on the Mount. He sings out of tune to the culture of the day and says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Don't emulate these deluded nutcases who think that their Bible reading is going to be enough for God. Don't try to emulate them by their style of dress. Don't try to emulate them by their religious activity. You need to run to the only one who has the adequate spiritual resources to make you rich. Don't emulate these guys. What Jesus' disciples then and now needed to realize and grasp that from God's perspective, we're all poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. We need to stop pretending that we've got it all together, that we don't need help, and that we can stand on our own 2 feet. We need to stop projecting success and progress and professionalism to one another. And I think that's illustrated really well by this advert.
You know, my business philosophy, no, not exactly, pertains to success. I must project success. I'll use FedEx run rate. Fair flat rate shipping. Exactly. Makes us look top notch, but we know it's affordable. Honey, can I ask you, please?
We don't have a reception entrance.
Should the pack be a FedEx Express saver for as low as $7.50?
To attain success, we got to project success. And he thinks he's in a high rise, but he's actually in his garage. And a lot of time, church, we're trying to project that we've got it sorted. Our cupboards are full, and we've no need of any help at all. Jesus says we need to admit our spiritual poverty. We need to get real about who we are and run to him who has the only resource we need to satisfy God's appetite for holiness. The incredible thing about CAP is in each of the three strands of its ministry, it's getting alongside people who have come to a position where they're admitting that they need help. People who need assistance to get back into employment, and they're saying, I realize that you've got what I could do with. So they're humble enough to realize that they need assistance. And those who have got themselves in debt, who find themselves in a position of debt and think, how can I get out of this on my own? They come to CAP who are able to help them work through a process and figure out what steps might be necessary in order to be debt-free. And even to come to a budgeting course is an acknowledgement that somebody might be able to help you with your finances. Somebody might know better than you how to handle money. Shock, horror. And so the incredible thing about the people that CAP are working with, are they're working with people who are humble enough to admit that they need assistance. And so if you're a befriender or a support worker, you're going to learn from these people. You're going to support them, yes. Get alongside them during that time. But the people that you're working alongside should be a mirror to you to say, this is your position before God. Needy before God. God knows better than all of us. And so we get deep insight into what it means to be a follower of Jesus as we find ourselves in the presence of other people who need assistance. That they reveal to us our position before a holy God because we do not have the resources to satisfy him. We do not have what it takes and we need him to come to us and help us. These people all have the courage to admit that things are not as they should be. Not as they could be. Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. At some level, CAP is working alongside people who mourn the loss of employment, mourn the loss of control over finance. And they're getting alongside people who realize that it wasn't always this way, and it doesn't have to always be this way. People who admit that our world is not perfect and that I am not perfect, and they need assistance. All of us can point to areas of life that are not as they should be. It's the reason why we complain and grumble, because we know that it could be different. We have in our minds and in our hearts a remembrance of Eden, when God created everything and saw that it was good. That's there in all of us, whether inside the church or outside the church. Eden echoes in our heart. We have a longing to get back to that perfection. We know that the world is not as it should be, that it's broken and fallen, that there's been a loss of some kind, that we're all mourning. We're all grieving that things are not as they should be. And so Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who acknowledge that there's been a loss, that the world is not perfect, that they are not perfect, and that change is possible. All our complaining and frustration tells us that something's been lost. And what CAP does is bring hope that what has been lost can be restored. There is a Redeemer. That we don't sit in the mess and in the mourning and think it's all going to be like this forever. CAP brings hope of change that no other charity can bring, because CAP is bringing hope not just about getting control of your finances, but of one who redeems all things, who will make all things new, pointing the way to Jesus. CAP is there for everyone who's willing to admit the reality that stuff has been lost, that things are not as they should be. So if you're a Christian today and you're in church and you're wondering, how can I mature as a disciple? How can I grow? Why don't you get involved with CAP? Why don't you volunteer your time to Clark and Sharon as they do the Job Club, or Jerry and Karen as they do CAP Money, or get in touch with Brian and say, I'd love to help out with CAP. Because you'll encounter people who will teach you about what it means to follow Jesus. You'll see people being vulnerable, admitting loss, admitting weakness, admitting that they're poor and need of help. And they'll hold up a mirror to how you are before a holy God. That's what you need to do. You need to admit your weakness. Stop projecting success all the time. Let the garage door up and say, here's the reality of how things are. I need help that only God can give. The clients will teach you about your life before God. You can journey alongside people like Linda and Christine did. See them begin to realize that change is possible, that what has been lost can be recovered. As you think about your own brokenness, your own pain, your own hurt, to discover that there is someone who wants to bring comfort into your life and not just to leave you as you are. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven right now. Not just future hope, but right now. To be in need before God right now is a good thing. To acknowledge that right now is a good thing. As we finish up this morning, I want to read again Psalm 42, verse 1. As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you. My soul thirsts for God, the living God. You see, behind all our longing, behind all our queuing, behind all our online clicking and hurrying and desire is a longing for God to be satisfied with us. An appetite for Him to be pleased with what we put on the table, but the cupboards are bare. And so just as people feel the pressure and the burden of a brown envelope coming through the door that they know they cannot pay, or hear the phone ringing and think, here is another demand that I cannot respond to because I do not have the resources, Jesus says in the same Sermon on the Mount, you must be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. And that lands like a brown envelope on the door every single day of our lives. It sounds like a phone ringing with a demand from God, be perfect, and we're crushed by the weight of it. Our soul longs for God, thirsts for God, but we realize that we cannot satisfy Him. Here's the good news of Christmas. Here's the good news of the gospel. Here's the good news that Cap shares to the world and to the church. The grace of the Lord Jesus Christ is that though He was rich, yet for your sakes, He became poor, so that you through His poverty might become rich. He has the resources. He's got what it takes to satisfy God, and He's willing to share with you. He's willing to give you the food from His cupboards so that you might satisfy God. That's the message of Christmas. That's what this whole thing is all about. And the ministry of CAP makes that news visible. Look, it's what's happening with these hampers. We're going to pack food and give it to people who have empty cupboards. Why? Why would we do that? What's that got to do with being a Christian? Well, this is a picture of what Jesus has done for us. Our cupboards are empty. We're a gathering of people who have empty cupboards before God. But somebody who had the resources shared them with us so that we might be with God. That's the message that we get to communicate to a needy and broken world of which we are a part. There's only one kind of people, poor in spirit kind of people. Blessed are those who realize it.